We're going to wrap up our discussion of the four gospel messages. Hopefully it's been a beneficial study for you. I know it has been for me. And we're going to end discussing today the book of John. Hopefully this works. And if we remember, we always kind of review the same thing every time to keep it fresh in our minds. What is the gospel? The gospel is the good news, and we're talking about the good news of Jesus Christ. And we've discussed already the first three gospels, and we refer to those as the synoptic gospels because they kind of have the same kind of point of view. Seeing together is what synoptic means, and some of these are kind of based off of each other. But today we're talking about the book of John, and this is a very unique book. I was going to do it in two sessions, but I'm going to try to do it all today in one setting. It's 92% unique. Almost everything in John is something that you only find in John. There's several stories that we find in the other places, but it's most of what we find is pretty unique to John. And one of the important things is when it was written. It was written a long time after these other books. 30-some years later, usually. And it's about 50 to 60 years after the time of Christ. So, and John is an old man at this time. And so I think it's important to kind of remember that and look at that as we look at the purpose of John. And we'll come back to that here in a little bit. The authorship, just as all the other ones on the old Greek manuscripts at the top, it just says, according to John, and that's all we know. And then we have to try to figure out who might this John be. There were a couple Johns. There was John Mark, who we think wrote Mark. And then there was the other apostle, John. And what's interesting about the book of John is he doesn't refer to John in it. He refers to himself in a very unique way, and we only find this mention of John in this unique way only in the book of John. And that is the disciple whom Jesus loved, or the beloved disciple. And I hope we don't put this on as John was kind of maybe arrogant in this. I don't think it's the case. I think that he was very close to Jesus. He just happened to be a little closer to Jesus than other people. We all have people we're probably a little closer to than others. It doesn't mean we don't love all of each other. It just means that there's certain people that we do have a little more closeness to. There could be some reasons for this. There's a lot of speculation that John and James, son of Zebedee, right? That their mother was Salome, who was probably the sister to Mary. So John and Jesus probably were cousins. They could have spent a lot of time growing up together with each other. And there, for whatever reason, there was a closeness there. And John always refers to not John, it has his name. He refers to himself as the disciple whom Jesus loved, or the beloved disciple. And John doesn't just put this title on himself. He also, if you remember, refers to Lazarus as that way too. Remember, he tells us the story of Lazarus. He says, Mary says, the one that you have loved, the one that you loved has died. And he's referring to Lazarus too. So Jesus was close to a lot of people. And sometimes this language is put on those that Jesus loved them. And it's put on us too, isn't it? Does Jesus love us? Yes, he does. And we have references to the fact that we are the ones that Jesus loves also. The places that we can look for these there's five places in the book of John. And I'm going to try, I have a lot of passages, but I'm going to try to go through them as quickly as we can. The first reference is in John 13:23. And if you remember that story, they were at the Last Supper and John was reclining back against Jesus, and Jesus had just said that someone was going to betray me. And Peter talked to the one whom Jesus loved and said, ask him who it is. Ask him who it is. And John leaned back and said, who is this that's going to betray me? And then that's the time where Jesus put the bread, and at the same time Judas did, as a reference to Judas being the one that was going to betray him. In John 19:26, all these stories I think are very familiar to probably everybody here. And every one of these stories, you would say that it's John. But in all these stories, it doesn't mention John by name. It actually, in every one of these stories, mentions the disciple whom Jesus loved. So I think pretty much everybody in here has kind of agreed in their mind that this is John when we're referring to it, because that's how we even tell the stories to our kids, that it was John that did these things. In 1926, at the cross with Mary, Jesus looks down and he says he saw the disciple whom he loved. And he said, "Mary, this is your son." And from that day forward, she went with him and he took care of her. This would also make sense if they were actually family and cousins too. But Jesus took care of his mother in the place of John. In John chapter 20, verse 2, we have the race. Remember Peter racing to the tomb? And Mary had told him that he is risen, the Savior is gone, and they raced to the tomb, and that was Peter racing the beloved disciple. And remember, the beloved disciple was the faster runner there, right? But when he got there, he stopped, and Peter did what? Ran right on by, right? Ran right into the tomb to see if indeed the Savior was missing. In John chapter 21, verse 7, he's fishing with Peter, and this is when Jesus comes out and walks on the water, and we'll talk a little bit about that one also. And in John chapter 21, verse 20, is the one I have written up here, and we talked a little bit about it in class this morning. And this is one of the more interesting places. John, if you read through John just straight through, you get to the end of John chapter 20. And if John chapter 21 is on the next page, you might not even turn the page and think you're done. You get to the first 20 chapters, and it seems like it ends in John 20. But John 21 is kind of it's almost like an appendix chapter. It's like John thought, I'm going to write down just a little bit more information here for them. And John chapter 21, the ending of John chapter 21, is almost exactly like John chapter 20, which we'll refer to here in a second also. But in John chapter 21, verse 20, he says, this is what is, there's a prediction about Peter and kind of a prediction about John. Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus... Well, I guess I need to set that up. Remember, they were walking along the road, and Jesus tells Peter the way he's going to die. He says, you're going to be led, and your arms will be stretched out. We think this is probably crucifixion, is the way it was. We know, in fact, that John says in here that Jesus said this to Peter to signify the way that Peter was going to die. And so Peter, is human, right? He's human. We ask silly questions sometimes. Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and said, Lord, who is going to betray you? When Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? What about him? How's he going to die? You told me how I'm going to die. How's he going to die? What about the rest of these? And Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. That's what we're commanded to do. Because of this, the rumor spread. Humans again, right? Did Jesus say that John was going to live forever? No. But what do? We like to spread rumors about things. It says, the rumor spread among the believers that the disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? This is the disciple who testifies to these things and who wrote them down. We know that his testimony is true. Here's how we know that this was John, the disciple that Jesus loved. We have the book that's called According to John. And at the very end of this book, he says, this disciple whom Jesus loved, who I referred to throughout this entire book, is the one that wrote these words down. This is his testimony. And of course, it became a problem later on because did John live forever? No, but some people started thinking he might be, right? Right? You get pretty old, people think they're going to live forever. He gets up to be about 95 or, going towards 100, and people started thinking, the Jesus must be coming back again. There was a lot of speculation. Jesus might be coming back again. John's getting pretty old. He can't live any much longer, can he? And so people started wondering, was John going to live forever? What is the purpose of John? The purpose is to testify one more time that Jesus was the Messiah and the Son of God. We've got to keep this in context of when this was written. This is a lot like the purpose of the other three Gospels. They're all kind of have somewhat the same purpose. But this is 30-some years later. than when those other Gospels were written, 50 to 60 years after it actually had happened. It'd be like today if someone was writing down some kind of history about World War II. You know, I don't know a whole lot about World War II, just from what I read about. Maybe I need to be reminded every once in a while. This is kind of like John's memoirs that he's writing here for us. He's an old man. He's getting ready to die. He writes down his recollections and his memories so that people can remember. There was a lot of people that are alive at this time when he writes this that it would be gone. They would be dead. They didn't even actually really see Jesus. They've just heard the stories. That's like us, isn't it? And sometimes it's very important to remember. To have people's memories unlocked and say, remember this. This is the good news. It's still here. It's still relevant. We need to still talk about it over and over again. Because there's a lot of people that grow up and they're just hearing these stories. They didn't experience all the things that happened. And they're starting to doubt. Is Jesus, was he really true? Did he really exist? Is he really the Son of God? And how far have we come since then? Where people still need to hear these stories. And if we don't teach these stories to our children, we're doing them a disservice. How are they going to ever know if we don't keep the story going? There's a lot of things that we would never know if people just didn't tell us. I was talking to Miles the other day, and I was just telling him that Marilyn McClurg is my grandpa Carol's sister. He was like, what? Didn't know. Well, I mean, you might not know unless someone tells you. I think they look exactly alike, but you know, sometimes it's hard to tell. I remember when I learned that Bob and Bev were brother and sister, I was like, are you kidding me? I had no idea. We just don't know things unless we keep on teaching about things from the past. And so it's very important that John wrote these words down. And, you know, he says, well, you've read the readings of Matthew and Mark and Luke. Those were written like 30 years ago. I'm going to give you my account also. And so the purpose is to testify one more time that Jesus was the Messiah, the Son of God. He's going to do this two ways. John's really unique and explicit in his writing. He does it in two ways. The first way he's going to do it is talking about Jesus' name, which is the same name as God. That's what he's going to try to prove, that Jesus is of God and is God. And he shares the exact same name. And, of course, if we go to John, the first chapter, John starts differently than all the other ones easily, right? We all know John 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through Him all things were made. Without Him nothing was made that has been made. The Word became flesh and made His dwelling among us. He was part of the creation. This is what we learn from John. We learn that Jesus was with God and created things. Nothing was created that was not created by Jesus. That's what John tells us. The Word became flesh. God became flesh and dwelt with us. This is amazing. This is a miracle. And if we refer it, so if Jesus is of God and is God, what was God's name? It's very important to understand this to go through as you study John. Well, we know what God's name was because God told the people, the Jews, what His name was. Clear back in Exodus 3. And Moses said unto God, behold, when I come to the children of Israel and shall say unto them, the God of your fathers has sent me unto you, they shall say to me, what is His name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And He said, thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you. The Jews know what the name of their God is. It's the great I Am. That is, He is, has always been, He is, He will always be. He exists is what I Am or Yahweh means in the Hebrew. I Am. That is the name of God. And we're going to show, John's going to show through his book that Jesus also has that name. And therefore, He is of God and He is the Son of God. That's the first point that John's going to show. And the second point is that Jesus is of God because of the miracles that He performed. This is very significant on why the miracles were performed and why even demons were present. They were present so that they could be cast out by Jesus and the apostles to give credit or proof that Jesus was the Son of God. 50, 60 years before this writing, we know that Peter, on the day of Pentecost, said, "Ye men of Israel, hear these words, Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God among you by miracles and wonders and signs, which God did by him in the midst of you, as you yourselves also know." This is how God proved his son was, that he had sent him to us, that he did these miracles, and that's how we are supposed to know. And so we have in John chapter 20, 30 through 31, "And many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book." This is what John says. "But these are written." So John didn't write about every single miracle. He chose seven. He chose seven miracles to signify that he thought that was good enough. It's a perfect number. Seven miracles that are going to prove that Jesus was the Messiah. So John says, there are many miracles, but the ones that I chose, that these are written, that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing ye might have life through his name. I chose these miracles that I want to tell you about to prove that Jesus Christ was the Son of God. And he chooses seven of them only. When he's referring to Jesus being the I am, he chooses seven instances of something that Jesus said about him being something. I am something. And in John 21 through 25, he again says that Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that could be written. John says, I can't write all the miracles to you. I can't say every single one. A lot of them have been expounded upon in Matthew and Mark and Luke. You've read these Gospels. I'm going to choose seven. And five of them are going to be completely unique just to John. Two of them are going to be mentioned in some of the other Gospels, but I'm going to give you seven, and five of them are brand new ones that you haven't heard of before, is what John is telling the people. So, let's look at these seven miracles and the seven I am statements. And I kind of put this chart together, and I'm going to try to prove kind of what I'm thinking here, and you can take it or leave it. But I refer to this as the sevenfold Gospel of John, because as you read through it, that's what you really notice. It's based, all framed around seven miracles and seven I am statements by Jesus. And I wrote down on the left side attributes of the devil that I think all of these kind of counteract. And I think most of you would agree that these are attributes of the devil. And we have these things in our lives, right? We all have some of these things in our lives. Do we have disappointment? Hopefully we don't have these things all the time in our lives. We try to get rid of these things. We try to get the devil out. But we have disappointment. We have doubt. We have disability. Spiritual disability. We have deprivation. We have despair. We have darkness. And we can have eternal death if we don't accept Jesus Christ. So, what are these miracles and the I am statements? And we're just going to kind of paraphrase a lot of them. The first miracle, and this is the first miracle that he does, because John says, and this was the first miracle that Jesus did. And it's the only miracle this miracle's only in John, is at the marriage feast. And I tell you, I would love to know a lot more about that miracle. Who was it that was getting married? Because Jesus and Mary and all of Jesus' disciples, they were all on the invitation list. It says they were invited to this wedding. So I'm really always curious to who was that exactly that was getting married that they all knew and what was happening. And, of course, you remember the story. They ran out of wine, right? They ran out of wine. And Mary, who somehow was involved in this because she was close, she knew the situation. She came to Jesus and said, "They have run out of wine." This is a tragedy, really. I mean, this is a really disappointing thing to have happened if they ran out of wine. Because water at that time isn't like water what we have, nice, fresh, cool water. You know, water was an unpalatable, not a great thing to be serving or to have. And sometimes it could even make you sick. And so wine was what they drank, and hopefully good wine. And it was the bridegroom's responsibility to be doing this. And Mary comes up to Jesus and says, they've run out. What are we going to do? And it's interesting that Jesus says, it's not my time yet. You know, it's not my time to start. But as a good son, he takes care of this situation. It's interesting when Mary walks away, you know, Mary tells him, he says, "Whatever he commands you, do it." There's a great line. Whatever Jesus commands you, do it. That's what Mary tells the people. And so Jesus turns water, unpalatable, disappointing stuff, into wine. Is it just regular wine? It's the best wine they've ever had. What is this? This is so unusual. The bridegroom always brings out the best wine first, and then after a while, everybody's had a lot to drink. They might not quite notice as much that the next wine that you bring out isn't the greatest stuff. But you saved the best wine till the end. Wow, what an amazing bridegroom is what the person is talking about there. And so we have a miracle of Jesus taking disappointment and turning into something completely different for us. In John 15:1, Jesus says, "I am the vine. Ye are the branches." Jesus is the provider of good things. He is the vine. He brings forth the grapes and the wine, the good wine for us. Doubt. The nobleman's son in John chapter 4. John chapter 4, 46 through 54. I wanted to kind of turn and read, but I think I'm just gonna paraphrase. If you'd like to turn there and just validate that my paraphrasing is somewhat correct, then you can do that. But this is a nobleman that comes to Jesus, and unlike the centurion that comes to Jesus, he comes and he says, "I need you to come to my house. My son is dying. I want you to come to my house to do this, to heal him." And Jesus says, "You know, unless you guys have miracles and miraculous wonders and signs, you don't believe. You don't believe. Unless you have miracles and signs." The point there is that the man wanted Jesus. He was different than the centurion. What did the centurion say? Did the centurion say, "Come so you can do this miracle"? The centurion said, "I know, you're the Son of God. Say it, and it happens. You don't have to come to my house. I'm not even worthy to have you in my house." This man thought that Jesus had to be there physically to actually do this miracle. And Jesus calls out their doubt. He calls out their doubt. And he says, "Why do you all doubt? You all have doubt. In me there is no doubt. It's an assurity that Jesus can save your soul. Not only save your life, but save physical life, but save your soul. And you should not have doubt." That's what we get from that miracle. And we go to John 14:6, and we have, and I probably should turn to this one, I'll probably paraphrase this incorrectly because I'm going to get it mixed up, but Thomas and Philip both are there, and they both say different things. And they say, that's a really important one, so let's go there. John 14:6. Jesus is talking about the way that he's going to be having to go, the way that he's going to be traveling, and he's going to be going through this death. And Thomas says, "Lord, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way?" And later on in verse 8, Philip says, "Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us." Jesus says, "I am of the Father, and the way to the Father is through me." Right? And Philip says, "Just show us the Father, and that'll be enough for us." You know, it's doubt. Just show us. Show him to us, and that'll be enough. And Jesus says, "I should be enough. I'm telling you, I am the Son of God." Now you're going to see some miraculous things. You're going to see the resurrection of myself, and then you'll know. But you should know right now, because I've been with you, and I love you, and you love me, and I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. Don't have doubt in that. You accept Jesus as your Savior. Disability. The lame man in John chapter 5:1-9. The man that is crippled, he's trying to get down to the pool, but he can never get down to the pool because everybody rushes into the pool to try to, kind of, they thought they had healing waters in this pool. And Jesus goes to him, and it's interesting kind of what he says. He says, "Do you want to get well?" That's what he asks. Do you want to get well? That's an important question. So, I mean, have you ever thought about it? Are there people that, you know, just like to be just, you know, not well? Do you want to get well? You know, you have to do some things sometimes to try to get well and to try to help yourself. You have to. And so what does Jesus tell him? Does Jesus say, "You're cured"? No, he tells him what? He says, "Get up and pick up your mat and walk." three things that he has to do. Do all these things. If you want to get well, then do these things right now. And the man did. The man did. He had faith in Jesus that he would be cured, and he did those things. That's the miracle of the lame man. And if we go to John chapter 10, verse, whatever it is behind that thing, I can't remember what the verse is on that. We have the where he says, he's talking about the sheep, right? And he says that if you want to come to the Father, you need to walk through what? You need to knock, and you need to walk through. And it sometimes in different versions says the gate. Sometimes he says, I am the door. So I put both of those up there. We need to do something. We need to meet Jesus halfway. We need to do some, not halfway, not even close to halfway. Sorry, I used that phrase. But we need to do some things. Jesus commands us to do some things. If we want to not just be disabled all the time, if we want to be able and doing things for Christ, then we need to actually do things for Christ. Deprivation. The feeding of the 5,000. John 6, 4 through 13. Jesus, all the 5,000 people are there, and Jesus says something to test them. He says, how are we going to feed all these people? Right? And there's some really interesting, kind of funny statements there. I think it was Philip again that says, you know, 8 days' wages wouldn't even fill. They wouldn't even give each of them a bite, is what he says. Right? And then someone else comes along and says, here's a boy. He has 5 loaves, 2 fishes. That's not going to do any good. Right? And Jesus did this to test them. How do you not know that Jesus can take care of every situation in your life? How do you not know that? People can be deprived. Jesus can give sustenance on these things. And he says at the end of that miracle, I am the bread of life. No man will go hungry. No man will go hungry that has accepted me. Despair. Walking on the water. This is in John chapter 6. They were out rowing in the boat. There was a big storm. They were terrified, it says. Terrified. And they saw Jesus on the water. And Jesus came in, and what happened to the storm? Calm. Peace. This is what Jesus brings when we have despair. And if we go to John chapter 10, that whole chapter is about the sheep and the shepherd. And it says that there's sheep out there, and a wolf comes in. And what happens to the sheep? They're terrified. Scatter. They scatter everywhere. But if they have the good shepherd, they're not. Because the good shepherd keeps the devil, keeps the wolf at bay. And so the shepherd brings calm, brings peace to the sheep, to the flock. Darkness. John chapter 9, the story of the blind man. One of my favorite chapters. Amazing, great story about calling the parents in and saying, what do you think about this? You know, how long has your son been blind? He's been blind since he was born. He's been blind since he was born. Everybody knows he was blind. And now he sees. Now he sees. And people wanted to have the blind man make Jesus be a false teacher. And the blind man says, all I know is that I was blind. And now I see. That's all I know. That's all I know. That's what he kept saying to the people that could kill him. And he just kept saying that. That's all I know. This is what Jesus brings. He brings light out of darkness. And of course, Jesus said, I am the what? I am the light of the world. Death. We only have the story of Lazarus in the book of John. John chapter 11. He dies, right? Lazarus dies. And what does he tell Mary and Martha? Mary and Martha said, if you would have been here, he wouldn't have died. And what does he tell them? I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection and the life. There is no life without Jesus Christ. You can talk about your physical life and death and be really concerned about it. And we are, aren't we? We really are. It's devastating when we lose people in our lives. It's very troublesome. But Jesus says that there is a different life that we need to be focused on. Those are your 7 miracles and the 7 I Am statements that are based on in the book of John. The devil brings disappointment. Jesus brings contentment. The devil brings doubt. Jesus gives us assurance. The devil gives disability. Jesus makes things makes us able. He is able to deliver us. Devil brings deprivation. Jesus brings sustenance and fulfills us, satisfies our needs. The devil brings despair. Jesus brings peace and calm into our lives. The devil brings darkness. Jesus brings light. And the devil brings death. And Jesus overcame the devil. So Jesus gives us life. Now I want you to look at your own life and look at these two lists. My life isn't all on the right. It's not all on the right. I want it to be all on the right. And I try to make as much on the right be part of my life as I can. But the devil sneaks in, doesn't he? There are times when I feel that I am disabled. And I can't do things the way I want to do it. There's times I have disappointment in my life. But these things shouldn't always stay there, over there, on that list on the left. They shouldn't stay there. Try to remove them. Work on getting those out of your life and letting Jesus work what He does in your lives. These are what John is trying to tell us that we can have if we follow the way, the truth, and the life. If we follow Jesus. I said there were 7 I am statements and 7 miracles. It wasn't exactly true. But I'm not Jesus. There's actually 8. But these next I am statements and this next miracle, we don't usually consider in the list because I refer to them as the ultimate I am statement and the ultimate miracle. In all the other I am statements, he said things like, I am the, and then the light, or the door, the way, the truth, the life, all these things that he said. But in John chapter 8, it's a really unique passage, 8:58-59. He's talking to the Jews, and Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am. This is an ultimate I am, because he doesn't say, I am something. He doesn't use it in a sentence. He says, I am. And the Jews knew exactly what this point he was making here. What is Jesus' point? He's saying, I am of God. I am of God. That's what he's saying. Before Abraham was, I am. This was not lost on the Jews. Sometimes I think this might be lost on us if we don't understand the context of it. This was not lost on the Jews. Basically what Jesus just told them is that I am God. Because they knew what I am meant. They'd known it all the way since Exodus. And they'd been telling their children the stories as they had been commanded to do. Jesus tells them that he is of God. And what do they try to do? They try to stone him. And he walks right through the midst of them and passes by. They're going to eventually kill him, but not at this point. Not at this point. He says, I am. And the ultimate miracle, of course, is in John 21. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed. Stone had been removed. That is the ultimate miracle that's mentioned, of course, in all the Gospels. Right? Because that is the point. It's the resurrection. The resurrection of Jesus Christ, which saves us. What would we not know if it weren't for the writings of John? We try to end every gospel with what we wouldn't know if it wasn't for John. And basically, it's like everything you read in John. And I got tired of making a list and I couldn't even fit it on the PowerPoint, so I just tried to write some real specific things that I think you're real familiar with that you might be interested in. It's only in John. Of course, Jesus being the Word, capital W, and part of creation, that is in John, very unique to John. John's disciples go to Jesus. So the disciples of Jesus were actually the disciples of John the Baptist first. John says, I must go away and you must go and follow Jesus now. And so John and James, his brother, they actually went to Jesus. And so we read about that in chapter 1. A lot of times we forget about they were actually disciples of John the Baptist before they were disciples of Jesus. Water into wine, I put 5 of the miracles that are all in bold there are only in John. The feeding of the 5,000 clearly is in all of them, feeding of the 5,000. Jesus clears the temple. Nicodemus comes to Jesus in the middle of the night. John chapter 3, really important chapter there. The woman at the well, the brothers of Jesus mock him. That we find that out in John. The adulterous woman when Jesus is writing in the dirt with his finger. What a great story that is. That's only in John. He washes his disciples' feet. I just wrote John chapters 14 through 17. All of that is complete unique material. Mary given to the disciple at the cross, Peter and John's race, and then at the very end, the discussion that discussion with Peter about how Peter's going to die. That's only at the very last, in the last chapter of John. So also, when we get done with these Gospels, we try to figure out what's the one verse in the whole Gospel that really lends itself to what this Gospel is about. And you might probably be able to guess this one. In fact, even if you weren't in the church, you might be able to guess this one, because you can see it at baseball games and everything else. What verse is this? John 3:16. And let's look at this verse. Let's really look at this verse. It's an amazing verse. John 3:16. For God so loved the world that He gave His only Son, that whosoever, Jews, Gentiles, who does John write to? He writes to whosoever. He says whosoever a lot. Whosoever believeth in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. The contrast between this and Islam is amazing. For God so loved the world that He sacrificed His Son. Not that He asked you to sacrifice sons for Him. This is a loving God. This is a loving God, and this is what He has done. And this is the Gospel. This is the good news that we need to share with people. This is how we have salvation. It's through Jesus Christ. So we get to the end of our four good newses. Our four gospel messages. And this is the good news that we have. Now, John wasn't quite done. He's an old man, but he has a couple more revelations that he's going to have. And at the end of that next book of Revelation, he gives us our invitation that we're going to offer this morning. Revelation chapter 22, verse 17. Whosoever is thirsty, let him come. And whosoever wishes, let him take the free gift of the water of life. This is how we answer the call to be saved. This is how we do this. So this morning, if we can take care of your needs, we ask that you answer the gospel.